This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Equity Minds.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is you can.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Pardon me. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this episode, and I feel like I'm doing a lot better than you are at the moment.
Why is that?
Well, because we can all hear your deep, gravelly baritone voice has dropped a few octaves.
Yes.
And you had to interrupt your introduction to cough.
Yes. This is true. I am somewhat under the weather, but the markets keep rolling. Equity Mates content keeps rolling. And what a time we're in.
And I'm locked in a studio with you all morning.
And you're locked in a studio with me.
That's not ideal. But you're right. The markets are rolling. They're rolling down the hill. They're rolling quickly down the hill. And last night, as they rolled, they gathered more momentum. We're recording on Thursday, the 19th of May. And last night, overnight in the US, the NASDAQ was down 5%. The S&P 500 was down 4%. It was tough.
It is tough. There's probably a lot of people out there questioning what to do, feeling like they wish they'd sold everything, feeling like they wish they never got in the markets in the first place. We understand it. We've been there before. So have many of the experts that we've spoken to on the show. My opinion is sit tight and think of the possibilities.
My opinion is this is super exciting time.
Think like of the possibilities.
This is the moment where you build wealth. This is like, you know, 2008, 2000. These are the times that people look back on and they were like,
damn.
Well, yeah, but the people that invested in those times that, you know, got Amazon in 2000 or a bank that survived in got Goldman in 2008, like
got Afterpay at 950
in 2020. Yeah.
And saw that go to 165.
So obviously, like we'll talk about. I think a lot of this episode and future episodes will be about the market falling. But I think for me, it's the market is falling, and what am I going to buy? Not the market is falling, and I'm going to stop investing. I mean, it'd be red hot if I decided I was going to stop investing. It would really put Equity Mates in jeopardy.
That would be quite controversial, yeah, and against a lot of things that we've spoken about over the years.
So to put the broader market fall in context, I feel like we don't really need to spend a lot of time on this. People know. No. Australia, not too bad. Down about 5%. The US, much worse. The S&P 500 is down about 18% for the year. The NASDAQ 100 is down about 27% for the year. This was a sell-off that started with unprofitable tech stocks, with crypto, with the frothier parts of the market. But now it is hitting everything.
98% of companies on the S&P 500 last night were down.
98%?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What were the two that were up?
Probably the inverse ETFs.
Well, no. If it was S&P 500, it was real companies. TJ Maxx, I don't know if they're in the S&P 500, but their parent company beat expectations and was up 6% overnight, the retailer.
There you go.
But the reason I talk about retail is because this started with tech and crypto and all of that, but this is now everywhere and it's brutal. Target missed expectations, fell like 24% overnight, a quarter of their market value wiped in a day. Walmart is down over 15% this week. This is now a broad market sell-off.
Yeah, well, obviously the concern of inflation is now really, the market is expecting it to hit consumers pretty hard and change the way that they spend their money. And that's why we're seeing a lot of the retailers now being hit. There's obviously cost inflation going into the input of all the goods and services and hitting the margins of these retailers as well.
Yeah. Well, so margins are getting hit, but also consumers aren't spending as much on discretionary items. They're spending more on food and fuel and the numbers that are being reported are starting to show that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was about to ask you what's an investor to do, but we should say Jeremy Grantham, our favorite perma bear, was out in the media overnight as well.
No surprises.
He thinks that this could be the first of two or even three legs down. So you know, he thinks 50% is likely, more than 50% is on the table, which is a scary thought. Scary how many bargains I'm going to buy. So what? Yeah, what's an investor to do, Bryce? What are we doing in a situation like this?
There's three things that you could probably do, Ren. You can hold through it and keep buying. And I'm going to put my hand up and my, well, I'm going to put my hand on my heart and say that there's probably a lot of people in the Equity Mates community wondering what we're doing. And I haven't sold a thing to date. I don't plan to sell anything. We're getting pretty excited in the office about the buying opportunities.
Yeah.
So hand on heart, haven't sold a thing. People may think I'm crazy. People may be thinking you're an idiot. Why aren't you taking your profits? As we've said many times before, the biggest advantage we have over a lot of these hedge fund managers who are out there at the moment telling people that they're selling is I'm in this for 40 years.
You know how excited Bryce is about what he's doing in this moment that he couldn't even get through the three options to do in that moment. He could have set it up and then told us what you're doing.
So the first is hold through and keep buying. The second thing you can do is try and play a bit of a defensive game. So set up or make some trades that have a bit of a defensive play or actually some shorts.
Yeah.
Or you can just go straight to cash, get out of the market.
And wait.
Keep your powder dry and wait.
Now, you've told us what you're doing, hold through and keep buying. No surprises that I'm taking the same approach. But I think when we talk about why, it's obvious, we've said it a few times already, that there's some great buying opportunities. But the other two strategies are fraught. And I think that's something that has really been shown over the past little while. Taking a defensive turn or going short, let's say you were going to go defensive. Plenty of the defensive stocks are also getting whacked. Like if you had sold out of unprofitable tech and said, I'm going to go big retail because, you know, people are always going to need to buy food. Walmart is the biggest retailer in the game. I'm going to sell out of unprofitable tech and go into Walmart because that's defensive. Well, then Walmart gets whacked 15% in a week. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, unless you went in like all in on commodity and oil stocks.
Value is still outperforming at the moment in terms of like a broad index. If you're buying to a value.
Is outperforming in this instance, just not falling as much.
Yeah, but I think that's a defensive play.
Well, of course it is. Yeah, like, yeah.
Defensive doesn't mean you're going to make money.
Yeah, you just lose less.
You're losing less, yeah.
So yeah, that's fair. Losing less is a good alternative, I guess. The other option is you can have a bear position, like you can
short.
Yeah, you can. There are a bunch of ETFs that short the market, but there's a problem with that, which is that it relies on market timing. And there was someone in our office, and I won't say who, that a couple of nights ago was saying they were going to go heavy into SQQQ. Now, for people who are not familiar with that, that is a triple levered inverse NASDAQ ETF. So if the NASDAQ goes up 1%, you lose 3%. If the NASDAQ goes down 3%, you make 9%. It's triple.
Would have made 15% last night.
Yeah, you would have made 15% last night. But they were going to go into it the day before when the NASDAQ went up 4%. So they would have lost 12% of their money in one night.
I somewhat agree with you, Ren. There can be a place for hedging if that's your game. But of course, it comes with, as you've mentioned, market timing risk, and you've got to really know what you're doing. So it's certainly not something that we're sitting here trying to play. That's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And the timing risk comes on both sides. Obviously, getting in at the right time, like this person who was going to do it in our office would have hit a dead cat bounce straight away and would have lost a significant chunk of their investment straight off the bat, but also getting the hedge right on the other side and exiting at the right time. It can become very ineffective if you've hedged it well on the way down, but you don't sell at the right time and then you lose some of what you've gained on the way back up. Mm. So there's market timing risk with going to cash. There's market timing risk with trying to short the market. The idea of going defensive has some merit, but you know everything's getting whacked at the moment. So, Bryce, how are we going to play this moment here at Equity Mates?
Well, it's an exciting time for us, Ren. You're walking on our way to work, having a chat about the opportunities that are presenting themselves in the tech space. So we're going to be, I guess, sharing some of the ideas that are coming across our desk, what's exciting us, the possibilities about what's next. That's where we feel like we're going to be playing a pretty important role for the community. What do you reckon?
I think, you know, we obviously can't talk about what we're buying. We can't talk about our recommendations, but we can aggregate the work of experts and across this podcast, across our social media, really share what some of the opportunities are, because I think we're both taking this view that this is a real opportunity for us. You know, we're at that age where we're earning more than we're spending. So we've got some savings that we can invest, and the market is throwing up some serious opportunities. So I think that's what we really want to get across in this episode, and but across this time period, is we're not going to be Captain Hindsight. We're not going to be saying it was obvious that the market was going to crash. We're not going to talk about what people should have done months ago or weeks ago. We're going to be really forward looking, and we're going to really try and find some opportunities.
And not pick the bottom.
Not try and pick the bottom. Because I think, you know, if we look back in at previous market crashes, you didn't have to time the bottom perfectly to do well. If you, you know, Amazon fell, what, 98% in 2000? If you'd bought it down 50%, if you'd bought it down 70%, if you'd bought it down 90%, you would have been stoked by what happened as the market recovered. Yeah. So let's use this opportunity to find great long-term investments, rather than lament that we didn't sell in November 2021.
Definitely won't be doing that. It's also important to take a bit of a step back and look at the bigger picture. The market, the US market, is still up from 2019. So just another reminder to kind of zoom out and don't freak out. So that's what you can expect from us over the next little while as things continue the way they are in markets.
And I think it's important to recognize that the economic conditions and the stock market are a little bit at odds at this point, because, you know, unemployment is incredibly low, and 80% of the S&P 500 actually beat expectations or beat estimates in the latest reporting season. Obviously, inflation is the really big story and the really big concern, rising interest rates on the back of that. But it's not like we're seeing the mass bankruptcies that we saw in 2000 or the mass layoffs of workers that we're seeing in 2008. Which is really pleasing. Like, if that's how this can play out and it's just a stock market sell-off, we get inflation under control, great. But I guess the canary in the coal mine and where we want to turn here and what we think people should just be keeping half an eye on is the junk bond market, because there are some warning signs there that bankruptcies might be coming, and that's going to be an important story to watch over the coming, I guess, weeks and months.
Well, talk us through it. What is happening in the junk bond market?
Well, for people who are unfamiliar with the term, junk bonds are just high yield bonds. They've got high interest rates because the companies, or sometimes the governments, but generally the companies that are issuing these bonds, selling these bonds to investors, are not considered investment grade. So, you know, the US government might be able to sell a bond at 1% interest. Apple might be able to sell a bond at 2.5% interest. But some of these companies need to sell a bond at like 10% interest because they're seen as riskier than the market. So that's what junk bonds are. What we've seen historically is that the spread between these junk bonds, these US company junk bonds, and US government treasury bonds, so some of the junkier bonds and some the safest bonds, the spread between those two interest rates, those two yields, can often be an important indicator of things are going wrong in the economy. Mm. So in 2000 and a few years after 2000, the spreads peaked. 2008, the spreads peaked. 2020, when March 2020, the spreads peaked as well. So it's just an important thing to watch because spreads have got to their highest levels since 2020.
Yeah, well, it's the worst levels in what, almost 18 months.
Yes.
So things aren't looking good for the junk bond market.
At a high level, junk bonds have sold off, and the whole bond market has sold off because interest rates are rising. On average, junk bonds are trading at 91 cents on the dollar, the lowest level since May 2020, and they've fallen about 10% this year. So when prices of bonds fall, yields rise. Mm-hmm. 4.3% was the average yield according to Bloomberg. In January, it's now 7.5%. So yields are increasing, the price of junk bonds are falling, and the spread between what investors are asking for as a return on a safe, high-quality bond, like a US Treasury, and a riskier, lower-quality bond, that spread is increasing. That spread has increased from 3.1% at the end of 2021 to 4.77% this week, according to the stat, who I'm just realizing. I think it was either the Wall Street Journal or Bloomberg. Or somewhere, but I didn't put who where I got times. That from. So that's the story in the junk bond market. There's a few examples that we've pulled to just tell the story of what's happening. But I think, you know, when we're talking about there hasn't been bankruptcies, this will be a good one to watch to see if some of these, if these companies can't pay back their debt, then there's a risk.
This is where, what's his name? Wolf of Wall Street really played, wasn't it?
Jordan Belfort.
Yeah, in pennies and junk.
Just
pennies.
I think a lot of penny stocks. Yeah. Have you heard of Carvana?
I have heard of Carvana.
Yeah, so they are a second-hand car dealer, but like online.
Yeah.
Down 90% from August last year.
Stock price
down 90%.
Wow.
So that's not great.
No, that sucks.
But if you look in the bond market, they were trying to raise sell $3.3 billion in bonds to acquire another company. They only could get the deal done when a private equity firm, Apollo, showed up and said they would buy half of the debt at a 10.25% interest rate.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they got the deal done 2 weeks later. The price of those bonds is down 9%.
Wow.
But yeah, 10% interest rate is brutal.
That is brutal. On $3.3 billion or half of $3.3 billion.
But I guess if you were lending the other half, you'd be like, hold on, Apollo got 10% interest. That's what I want as well.
For sure.
So that's one example, but there's plenty of other examples of listed companies that investors aren't loving at the moment, the bond market investors. Diebold Nixdorf.
Never heard of them? No.
They're an ATM machine manufacturer. They have $400 million in bonds that are maturing in 2024, so that's when they have to pay the full amount back to investors. They slipped to almost 40 cents on the dollar. 2 weeks ago, it was 90 cents on the dollar.
Wow.
And that just indicates how likely investors think it is that they're going to get
their money
paid
back.
There's a few others. Do you want to talk through those?
Party City Holdco. Never heard of them. The ticker's PRTY. Party City. So they've got some bonds due in 2026. The interest rate is 8.75%. And they've been one of the most actively traded junk bonds this week, falling an astounding 15% to 74 cents on the dollar. So, again, not a lot of confidence there for the market that these guys are going to be able to pay anything back.
Party City's share price is also down 85%.
What does Party City do?
They hold party. No, they
kind of like the name.
It's like they got a good ticker as well. It's PRTY. I think it's like retail stores for party equipment. Hire. And this could be wrong. This is based off no research. But you know how like all those Halloween stores pop up around Halloween and stuff like that?
Yeah.
I think they do a lot of those.
Right.
But don't quote me on that second part. But yeah, share price down 86% since November.
Wow.
So the bond market is not confident that they're going to get their money back there. One of the largest issuers of junk bonds in the US, Bosch Health, apologies for the pronunciation. They have $1.25 billion in bonds maturing in 2028. They were trading above 90 cents at the start of the year. They're now below 60 cents. So I think that's a story that's emerging and one to keep an eye on is the companies that will go bankrupt first are either these unprofitable tech stocks that don't have any debt but just can't raise any money, or these companies in the that have debt but they have to raise it at such a high interest rate, who are going to struggle to pay it back.
Yeah.
So they're probably the two big categories of companies to watch because, junk bond spreads are widening.
Yeah. Well, Ren, that brings us to our next segment of the show, which is looking at four stocks from Daniel Loeb's investor letter. But we're going to take a very quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So, Ren, we've been covering off some investor letters and really having a deep dive into what the experts are doing in times like this. And there's no, we say it time and time again, but there's no sort of better resource in our mind than reading some investor letters from some of the best investors around the world. And we've got another, a great one here today from Daniel Loeb, who started Third Point, very well-known activist investor. He's He got his name from shaking up boards, taking an activist approach, which we'll touch on in a second. But he manages $19 billion, as we said, with Third Point. Yeah, he's we're going to unpack four stocks that he's spoken about in his investor letter.
Yeah, that's right. Famous for his letter writing tactics, where he would write a public letter to the board but publish it publicly and basically shame the board into changing their ways. And he's, you know, he's seen CEOs fired and stuff as a result.
Great. Love that.
So the four companies that we're talking about, Shell, the oil company, Glencore, the mining and commodity trading company, PG&E, which is an energy company, and then Consensus Software, which is a Web3 metaverse and crypto company. One of those four is not like the other.
Yes. So let's start with Shell. And he's back at it again.
Yeah, he's taking a very activist approach here, which is true to form for him.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure Shell had a dual company structure, and I think there was they were listed had a dual listed structure as well. I think they're now all returning to the UK. Lobb's been pushing that effort. But to quote from his letter, we have reiterated our view that Shell's portfolio of disparate businesses ranging from deep water oil to wind farms to gas stations to chemical plants is confusing and unmanageable.
Mm.
And so they're pushing to see some changes there.
He's pretty scathing of them in his letter. He kind of says that it's all over the shop, it's confusing, and is really, really pushing for some corporate change. So I'd like to see more fund managers managing a lot of money doing this sort of stuff. I think it's a good approach.
Well, so Shell's financials.
Yes.
For the quarter, the March quarter just finished. Revenue up 50% year on year. Profit up 26% year on year. I mean, earnings per share up 30%. Operating income up 126%. Good time to be an oil company.
Great time.
Yeah.
But he's not happy with them.
Well, I think he was not happy with them before. Oh, look at this. December quarter, revenue up 94%.
Whoa.
Profit up 186%. Whoa. Yeah.
That's BP vibes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just oil is just having a great moment. And so I guess if you were going to push for a restructure, now would be the time.
Yeah.
Well, the going is good and you got the cash flow to do what you need to do.
Yeah. So, Ren, let's move on to the second company, and that's Glencore, listed over in London, GLEN. This was a long position that Daniel took, Third Point took. So if you haven't heard of Glencore, it's a massive commodity trader and also a mining company, and they mine copper and nickel, which, you know, we've spoken previously in one of our episodes on the future of Australian industry. They're critical inputs for the transition to renewable energy.
Yeah, and I think that's why Third Point like them, because of the copper and nickel. I think a lot of people will know Glencore for another commodity, coal.
Yes. Yeah. But you're right. He points out in his letter that they believe that these are two metals that are undergoing a substantial acceleration in demand that are going to outpace supply, and of course, you know, provide some decent returns. Or they believe that it's going to provide some returns for their shareholders. So,
but how crazy is this? So, coal, a lot of people are off for good reason.
Yes.
Climate change. have you heard of it?
Yeah.
But coal is obviously having a real moment. Like any energy commodity is having a moment. Oil, gas, coal. How crazy is this? Glencore's coal business is set to generate approximately 10% of the company's market cap in free cash flow this year.
Wow.
Not even their whole business, just their coal business.
Wow. That's significant.
That's significant.
Yeah.
But I still wouldn't invest in a coal miner.
You wouldn't?
Nah.
Why's that? Just they're done?
I mean, yeah, I want to invest where the future is going. I'm pretty lax when it comes to ethical investing. Like there are a lot of people that we're friends with that in the Equity Mates community that have much more stringent standards.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't in good conscience watch you smoke darts and then say I wouldn't invest in a tobacco company.
Not true.
But for me, coal is the one that it's like... Yeah, it just makes me feel uneasy to invest in it.
Yeah, fair call. Yeah. Fair call. Well, let's move to the third, PG&E Corporation.
Yeah, have you heard of this company?
No, I haven't.
So this was, I remember first hearing about this during the California fires a few years ago, and they were in serious amounts of trouble. The company is Pacific Gas and Electric. It's a California utility. The story is basically they didn't maintain a lot of their equipment properly, and they then, I don't know if they caused or they contributed to some of those devastating fires in like 2018, 2019 in California. Do you remember those?
Yeah, yeah.
It's tough to keep up because California
I do remember them. Yeah.
Climate change, you heard of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. They had a $30 billion liability for poorly maintaining their equipment.
Wow.
And so I think their stock price obviously fell off a cliff, and I think they had to declare bankruptcy.
Oh, wow.
And so I actually
didn't, they're back.
They're back. They're back, and Third Point are investing in them. And the reason
poor management to get $30 billion in liability from not looking after equipment.
Yeah, poor management to not maintain your equipment properly and caused or contribute to devastating bushfires that killed a lot of people.
What the hell?
Yeah. The reason that I think this is interesting, my biggest takeaway from the write-up on this company is how simple investing can be at times. So let me give you some of these points. From the letter, quote, in April, PG&E Corporation reported a straightforward and uneventful set of results, delivering on its promises to customers and investors. As investors, we celebrate the simplicity, which I like, but their thesis is also incredibly simple. PG&E trades at 12 times 2022 consensus earnings. The average for a utility company in America is 21 times, and their closest peer in California, a company called Edison International, trades at 15 times.
It's a value play.
It's literally like, what's the price to earnings ratio compared to the industry and the closest competitor?
Yeah, it's cheaper.
It's cheaper. and they, from the letter again, quote, in this type of market environment, the financial equation of consistent earnings growth and multiple re-rating, and so that's the price to earnings re-rating back to the industry, makes for a wonderfully boring story and a solid anchor for our portfolio as Third Point's largest position.
Mm.
And obviously, like, the market would have reasons why they're not valuing them as high as the industry because of its history, but that is as simple as this thesis needs to be.
Yeah.
This is a $19 billion hedge fund, and this is their largest position, and that's the thesis.
Yeah, well, investing doesn't need to be complicated.
Investing doesn't need to be complicated.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Well, and as we say, your thesis can be 30 words or 300 or 30 pages, and it's clear he's been able to articulate why he's making that investment. I would hope there's a different management team in there, though, to be honest.
Surely.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, if you've gone bankrupt.
Well, I think in the letter they wrote about the CEO... Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I mean, last episode we had a whole conversation about what it means when you go bankrupt. So let's not do that again. I think
last episode we did have another company that came back from bankruptcy from memory.
Yeah.
And it was in a letter. But anyway, let's turn to the final one, which is Consensus Software.
First Point, not listed.
Not listed.
Yeah.
Yes, they've accessed this through, what was it, their C round?
Series C and Series D. Tell us about the company, Consensus.
Well, third point, they remain active investors in what they call the evolving digital asset ecosystem with a focus on companies driving the next generation infrastructure of the decentralized economy. Web3, they love it. They're in it. And they're following on from their Series C round with a Series D in Consensus Software. And what it does, it's the gateway to the Ethereum ecosystem. That's essentially what it does. One of their main products is MetaMask, which we have. I've got.
I've used once take crypto and put it into ClimaDAO.
Lost all our money.
Potentially
got rugged, but that's okay.
We did get rugged. My first and only rugging.
I'm pretty sure one of my bold predictions at the start of the year that was someone in Equity Mates will get rugged.
Yeah, and it turns out we all got rugged because we were all in it. And we're not going to shout out the person that told us about ClimaDAO, but...
No, we'll get done for defamation. But yeah, they're in. They're one of the biggest players in the Web3 space, and the company's founded by Joe Lubin, or led by Joe Lubin, who is one of the co-founders of Ethereum. Mm. So, some pretty good talent in there leading the company. And third point have taken a position.
Yeah, monthly active users up 30 times from March 2020. Which just really tells the story of what happened over the last 2 years, really since the COVID lows, up almost three times from August 2021. That's three times in 6 months. Still pretty crazy. But the craziest thing for me was the numbers around the capital raises. And I know this is becoming more and more commonplace in these big, I was going to call them, mega cap startups. Let's call them that. Their Series C, they raised $200 million at a $3.2 billion valuation in November 2021. 5 months later, in March 2022, they raised their Series D, $450 million they raise at a $7 billion valuation.
That's Canva growth.
So they've more than doubled their valuation in 5 months from $3.2 billion to $7 billion. But they raised $200 million and 5 months later they needed to raise again.
Mm.
Well, maybe they didn't need to. Maybe they were just like, the market's good. Let's take the chance.
Yeah.
But how much money are they spending?
Chewing through it. Well, yeah, there's some stories here of some of the guys that are raising heaps in this and they're burning through. Engineers alone cost a fortune.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, that's what you get. I think in the letter he terms it as parabolic user growth in 2021. So if you have parabolic user growth, I'm sure you can tap on the shoulders of some of the guys to raise some cash. But
I think to sum up this conversation, a number of companies from Third Point, this is, as we've said at the start of this episode, this is something we want to keep doing. Across socials and across the podcast is sharing what expert investors are writing about, investing in, all of that. We spoke about Shell, which is listed. Main listing is in the UK, S-H-E-L. We spoke about Glencore, also listed in the UK, Glen, G-L-E-N. PG&E Corporation listed over in the US. Let's get their ticker quickly. PG&E, should have guessed it. What do you reckon the ticker is?
PGE.
No, PCG. Got ya. Listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And then Consensus Software, not listed. Contributors to Bryce and I getting rugged. So we'll never forgive them for that.
No.
A range of companies.
Yeah, great range.
Yeah.
Great range of companies. Always a good reminder that there's an investing universe outside the big tech companies.
Yes.
Plenty of opportunity. So, Ren, speaking of crypto and getting rugged, we can't close out without a few thoughts on what's going on in the crypto space, particularly with Luna and Terra. We were going to give it a crack and explain it ourselves, but Thomas from Comedian v Economist, the economist side of the two, he did such a great job over on CVE this week that we're going to throw to his explanation and then have a quick chat about it after.
Yeah, and it's not just about crypto for people who are, tuning out at the thought of more crypto chat. He talks about how it relates to George Soros and how he broke the Bank of England. Yeah. So. A good conversation that let's listen to now.
So stable coins, like I know if people are coming new to this, so Someone talked about it being like the chips at a casino is what you play with when you're in the crypto casino, right? So you don't have to actually use fiat money. So you can get into the crypto system, you use your stable coins to trade in and out of trades, and then when you want to cash in, then you go and trade your stable coins for fiat. So that's the idea of how they work.
Yeah, it's all about, like, the idea, I think, is that you can then essentially you don't have to worry about the volatility. Lol. You don't have to worry about the volatility of the market because it's a stable coin. So, but you get all the privacy and transactability of crypto. So you can buy things internationally. You can, you know, it becomes less, more difficult to trace your transactions and all those crypto decentralized benefits. But you get this rock solid stability of the US dollar or whatever other pegged currency you've got.
I think that 70% of Bitcoin purchases are made using Tether. Tether's like the biggest stable coin in the market. Yeah, and it's 70%.
Which also fell off a cliff, but then that's managed regain its peg.
Yeah.
And so it's now back pegging against the US dollar. Mm. But Terra, not so much.
No.
So what are the implications for the crypto space?
I mean, I think this is really interesting. I think the big one is whether these stable coins will stay stable. And like in a sort of currency sense, they're pegged. Like we have throughout history, we've often pegged currencies. You peg one currency to another in terms of its value, and then the central bank, you know, maintains that value through buying and selling or whatever it's doing or capital controls. So it's a peg. So pegs historically have often run into trouble. So the parallel a lot of people were talking about is the exchange rate mechanism crisis back in 1992. So this is when George Soros broke the Bank of England. So the bank, the pound was pegged to the mark through the exchange rate mechanism. So all the European countries sort of were running fixed exchange rates with each other. But it seemed everyone thought that the pound was overvalued and that it needed to devalue. But what happens with a peg is you get what George Soros called a one-way bet. So you can short the currency, but there's no risk that the currency is going to move because you take a short bet, you bet the price is going to fall. The worst case scenario is that the peg holds and the currency doesn't change value at all. And then you're only up for the interest cost you've had to pay to borrow the money for your short. But so it's like, you compare that with like when you're shorting, you know, GameStop or something or AMC, when you got that short squeeze, the risk, you know, you bet that the stock price is going to fall, but then the stock price goes up. You're exposed to sort of infinite risk there. But you're not with a peg. The only risk is that it stays steady. It doesn't actually fall. And so it creates this one-way bet where you can short this is what George Soros did. He shorted the pound. He was borrowing pounds and selling them into the market, betting that they would fall, that the pound would fall in value. If it didn't fall in value, it was just, he knew what the outcome was going to be. There's no risk the pound was going to go up. So it was a one-way bet. And so he piled on, people saw what he was doing. It created a bit of a rush. The whole Forex market piled on, and eventually it broke the Bank of England. The Bank of England had to raise rates. They raised it by 200 basis points in the morning and then another 200 basis points in the evening, in the afternoon. Yeah, 400 in a day trying to defend this peg. And eventually there was so much money betting against them that they just gave up and let the pound
declared
fall.
Bankruptcy.
Declared bankruptcy. Yeah.
They let the pound fall.
They let the pound fall. Yeah, yeah. At which point George Soros's short bet then turned out to be a winner, and he banked $1 billion out of that trade.
Really?
One trade, apparently. Yeah, biggest trade in history. Yeah, so it became super famous, and then all countries were very nervous about pegs from that point on, particularly when there's downside pressure, which there is. And so this is what people are talking now, that this is what happened to Terra, is that there was a short bet against Terra. Effectively, it was a little bit more engineered than that through Bitcoin, but that, yeah, it was an attack because people didn't think it could hold, because part of the way like it operates, it was algorithmic, so it's not backed by anything. Like Tether is theoretically at least backed by
Luna.
Yeah, Terra was backed by Luna, which is like a cryptocurrency, which kind of works when Luna's rising, but once Luna starts falling, then you create this death spiral where they had to print more Luna to try and prop up the currency, which devalues Luna, which undermines the value of the of terror. And
because that was my understanding of the situation was Luna was used as like a, I think they call it a governance token.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, they control the price of terror by controlling the supply of Luna. So they would just print more Luna, increase, you know, liquidity mm-hmm. in the market, increase supply in the market, which brought the cost down, and then they would burn tokens if they needed to reduce supply and push the cost up.
Mm.
But then they started heading the wrong way, and so they just started like printing Luna like it was going out of fashion,
mm.
but realized that there was nobody to buy the Luna anymore.
Mm.
So then they just it went to zero.
Luna's supply went from $345 million at the start of last week to end with 6.5 trillion Luna in circulation by the end
it's
of the week.
It's not working!
Yeah, and at that point they just gave up.
Oh, man.
I mean, the funny thing is algorithmic pegs have failed already in the market, and they also this death spiral exists in markets in other financial instruments, so it's kind of well known. And so people have been talking about it for a while. It's not a shock. Like people were pointing to this
weakness.
But it was a long time
ago, Thomas. It was a long time ago that these things happened. I don't know who George Soros is, but I know what crypto is.
Yeah.
And you can guarantee that the Reddit forums that are spruiking crypto and the Twitter feeds with Kenny G talking about buying bullish on Luna, that he's probably not across the George Soros situation. So
I mean, that's what it looks like. Some of the analysis that I'm reading is pretty condescending about the way this peg was structured. it's quite funny. I'll admit, I'm having a good laugh. But yeah, it's pretty full on. But I think it's interesting because this now I think puts pressure on the other pegs. So the stable coin. So Terra had about 10% of the total stable coin market cap.
Mm.
Tether's the biggest. It's saying it's 46% or something like that. But you know, if you can break something that's 10% of the market, like what's to stop you breaking something that's 46%? Mm. And they're a different structure in the sense that Tether is supposedly it's collateralized. So you buy $1 worth of Tether, you give Tether a dollar, and then that it sticks that in the bank, or it buys a treasury bond or something like that.
Mm.
But a lot of people are like, there's a lot of red flags around. What a Business Insider ran an article saying that Tether looks like a business that's a quilt made up of entirely of red flags. And there's no auditing, yeah, right. Like there's no transparency about where Tether is keeping its reserves and whether it can defend itself or whether there even is the money there.
Could be in Bitcoin.
Could be, yeah, which is what Luna went and did to try and defend itself, bought a whole bunch of Bitcoin.
And then Bitcoin went down. Everything went down. So is there any implications here for the broader market? Like could it spread beyond crypto, or is this just another kind of crazy crypto story?
I think risk for crypto is that you see an attack on Tether, and if there's massive selling on Tether, then Tether has to come up with its reserves, and it depends on how liquid those reserves are. If it is in government debt paper, as they say that it is, then they're going to be all right. But a lot of people saying that there's no evidence that that's the case, and they think that they're speculating in Chinese real estate paper and things like this. So it'll be interesting if there is an attack on Tether, because as I'm saying, it's a one way bet. You know, Tether either holds its peg or it falls. There's no downside. If you're shorting, all you got is your interest expense. There's no downside to it. You know, and they're saying people attacked Terra. So what's to stop people attacking Tether and then doing it in a group, which is what Soros happened. Once Soros says, I'm doing this, everyone like, yeah, one way bet. I'm with you. Like throw 20 billion at it. No worries. Yeah. So they could go after Tether.
All his snail mail followers that were tuned into his newsletter.
If Tether goes down, so Tether's. Yeah, so there's something like 70% of Bitcoin purchases are done in Tether. Tether's daily trading volume is higher than Bitcoin and Ethereum combined. So that's a big story in the market. And less liquid assets are worth less. That's just the general rule in finance. The less liquid an asset is, the less it's worth, other things being equal. So that then puts a lot of pressure on the whole crypto space, I would think. And then the question then is, like, does this bleed into the financial system? And for the moment, people don't seem too worried about that. But, Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I was reading someone saying, like, you know, you look at crypto's market cap, it's down from $3 trillion at its peak last year. It's now down to just over $1 trillion. So $2 trillion's been wiped from the market. You break that down, about $1 trillion's your retail mum and dad investors and your crypto chads. They've lost $1 trillion. But the other trillion is institutional investors. And if you look at Coinbase's trading volumes in 2021, two-thirds of it was institutional. Like, it used to be, you know, entirely retail, but now two-thirds of it were institutional last year on Coinbase's exchange. So, and everyone was talking about, oh, institutional players are getting in, they're going great, but those institutional players are getting burned now and they've lost $1 trillion. That in itself isn't enough to crash the economy, but it depends on how leveraged it is, because you had $1 trillion highly leveraged during the GFC. That's what caused the GFC. So $1 trillion, if it's leveraged, is enough to cause some serious problems. But we don't really know yet. So, yeah, depends on that. But
could be a few more people institutionalized before this is all over, I reckon.
If you would like to hear more about what CVE do, Thomas and Adam, make sure you go and subscribe to their show. They're doing a fantastic job of breaking down what's going on in the macro landscape and some of the big news stories. And hopefully that gave you a good example of the style in which that they deliver it. It's a fantastic show. We've got Get Started Investing as well. This week we cover the fact that it is all going to be okay, and just give you a bit of a reminder on how to zoom out a little bit and put everything in perspective. And then to cover off the rest of your investing journey, we've got You're in Good Company, The Dive, which is our news show. And we come at you three times a week, each episode, taking news headlines and putting it into context and looking at the bigger picture. Crypto Curious is unpacking everything that's going on in crypto markets at the moment. There is plenty happening. And Talk Money to Me, to our financial advisors, Candace and Felicity, helping you on your money journey. So there's plenty of content in the Equity Mates community and on our network. Head to equitymates.com for more information. But Ren, as we said at the top of the show, we're going to endeavor to highlight some of the awesome possibilities and exciting moments that are going to pop up as the markets continue on their frothy journey. And it's always good to chat stocks. Pick up next week.
Sounds good.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. Equity Mates gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by a range of financial service professionals. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Equity Mates Media does not operate under an Australian financial services license and relies on the exemption available under the Corporations Act 2001 in respect of any information or advice given. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast or video. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.